Thank you, Your Honor. My case was based entirely on 42 U.S.C. 1983 for multiple violations of my civil and constitutional rights under color of law over a period of 2 years by various actors employed by the city of Arlington, Texas. My petition clearly stated the suit's legal foundation by indicating the trial court's jurisdiction was the various laws of the state of Texas and Section 42 U.S.C. 1983 of the U.S. Code. Nowhere in the four corners of my plaintiff original verified petition did I refer to the Texas Tort Claims Act. Opposing counsel wrongfully and knowingly seized upon the pretext of the Texas Tort Claims Act to entice the trial court in dismissing the suit. The Texas Supreme Court, following the Supreme Court of the United States, has explained in Texas versus Allen that a state court cannot refuse to entertain a section of 1983 on the grounds that it is barred by the defense of sovereign immunity. The Supreme Court of the United States has further found that under 1983, local government units may be held liable for the deprivation of federal constitutional rights. According to the Supreme Court, cities and counties enjoying sovereign immunity do not have immunity under the 11th Amendment. Local government entities, such as counties, are liable for damages under 1983 for constitutional violations resulting from official policy and custom. The Texas Tort Claims Act does not waive immunity if the claim arises out of assault, battery, false imprisonment, or other intentional torts. Local government units are considered persons within the meaning of 42 U.S.C. 1983 and may be held liable for constitutional torts suffered as a result of official policy, custom, or pattern. Defendants' claim and the reliance on the Texas Tort Claims Act to establish immunity was misplaced from the outset and misled the trial court into an erroneous decision. None of the conditions listed in the Tort Claims Act were part of the subject matter of the trial court. Opposing counsel's own authority, Walton versus the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, states that the TTCA provides exception of its immunity if the plaintiff is suing based on intentional tort. The Texas Claims Act does not waive state immunity for claims arising out of assault, battery, false imprisonment, or other intentional torts. When a federal claim is brought under 1983, availability of qualified immunity as defense must be assessed under federal law. The threshold inquiry in any 1983 claim is where the plaintiff has been deprived of a right secured by the Constitution. And the first step in deciding whether the defendant is entitled to qualified immunity is to determine whether constitutional rights were violated. My statement of facts, set out both in trial court and here indisputably, show that each and every section I complained about were taken under color of law. Counties and other local government entities are persons for the purposes of 1983 claims and may be held liable under 42 U.S.C. 1983.
Mr. Swain, weren't there provisions, though, in your actual petition that requested relief under Texas law as well as federal law?
All those cases, though, refer to 42 U.S.C. 1983. There were no cases for Texas Tort Claims Act.
No, but I think didn't you seek damages under Texas law as well?
As I recall, under federal law. All the acts I complained about in my plaintiff's original verified petition were ministerial acts requiring each of the various defendants, actors who would be liable under 42 U.S.C. 1983. At the November hearing preceding the order in question, I informed the court on the record that the defendant had responded to me with delivery of documents less than 24 hours prior to the hearing, which implicated my due process rights. The purpose of this notice requirement is to avoid unfair surprises before trial and trial by ambush. Such failure to protect my rights under such an obvious violation of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure amounts to an error that affected the outcome of the proceeding and can only be characterized as abuse of discretion by the court, correctable in reversal and remand.
Can you tell us what rule of civil procedure it is that was violated?
Okay, the rule that was violated
assuming you're going to say 21A, but I believe these are responsive. The response, not setting something, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it was under...
Not take up your time now and tell me when you get your rebuttal, that'll be fine.
Okay, well, it was TRAP 38.2A1C2.
Appellant's brief?
I'm sorry, I apologize. That's the appellant's brief. That's how they reply back to my brief. I'll reply back on the later date.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swang. Ms. Wilkerson.
May it please the court, Denise Wilkerson for the City of Arlington on behalf of its 11 employees. Mr. Swang states this case is based solely on federal law. I would ask this court to review his petition to see where he has refers to that he seeks damages pursuant to Texas and federal law in every single request for relief he has in the petition. He repeats Texas and federal law together. The applicable Texas law is the Texas Tort Claims Act. This issue has been decided by this court as well as the Texas Supreme Court that intentional torts fall under the parameter of the Texas Tort Claims Act, and the provisions of 101-106E apply to claims of intentional torts filed against a governmental entity and its employees. The provision says that if a suit is filed under this chapter against both a governmental unit and any of its employees, the employee shall immediately be dismissed on the filing of a motion by a governmental unit. So the City of Arlington is here because the provision in the statute requires us to file the motion on behalf of our employees. However, Arlington has been non-suited from this case and is no longer actually a party to it. Swain is asking in his briefing that the suit be reinstated against the City of Arlington, but we were non-suited back in October of 2008, I believe, and no longer a party to this case. And no, he has not made any attempt to refile the case against the City of Arlington within limitations.
So there was no amended petition adding Arlington back in?
No.
And was the non-suit given with or without prejudice?
It's attached to my brief. I don't have it in front of me. The reason for this provision is that the legislature had the goal to reduce the use of public resources that the government would be required to use in defending itself and its employees in redundant litigation and alternative theories of recovery. That was the intent of the legislature, to conserve government resources, which now more than ever is applicable.
But how can that election of remedies provision usurp a cause of action asserted under a federal act?
Okay, this case was filed in state court. since it says dismissal of the employee shall be immediate, it doesn't say, well, only the tort claims against the employee shall be immediate. It says all claims.
So your position then is that the Texas Tort Claims Act usurps a federal statute relative to federal civil rights?
I'm saying that when you choose to file the case in state court, you must file state procedural law. And in the case of Walton versus the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, very similar facts decided by the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals, a 1983 cause of action was dismissed against the employees in that case as well, based on 101-106E of the Texas Tort Claims Act. The Texas Supreme Court in the Mission consolidated case held that it applies to all claims against the employees, whether they fall under the Texas Tort Claims Act or not, as long as they arise from the same facts. And in Swain's petition, he's alleging the exact same factual allegations against the judges that were involved, the prosecutors that were involved, the police officers that were involved, as he's alleging against the city of Arlington.
Well, the first sentence of 101-106 says the filing of a suit under this chapter. Clearly, his 1983 claim is not a suit under this chapter.
Right, but the intentional tort claims are under this chapter. And so there was a suit filed under this chapter against the governmental unit.
Also.
And so those claims, the 1983 claims, under E, it doesn't say which of the claims shall be dismissed. It only says the employee shall be dismissed.
I don't see how Texas law can trump the federal statutes.
Well, if you look to the Erie Doctrine, federal courts that have looked at this, I didn't go much into discussion of this issue because Mr. Swain has not really addressed it in his briefing. But under the Erie Doctrine, when a procedural issue in state court involves a substantive policy of the legislature, then it is applied to federal cases, or federal, and specifically...
People would spell that E-E-R-I-E, but go ahead.
Erie? In the case of ALCALA versus Webb County, Texas, it was not cited in my brief because this was not an issue raised by Mr. Swain, but at 620 F sub 2nd 795, decided April 2nd, 2009, it's a fairly recent case. It talks about the applicability of federal procedural law and state procedural law to claims under 101-106. And it specifically holds where a state rule reflects the substantive state policy not in conflict with the plain meaning of federal rules, then the state rule is the rule of decision and should be applied under the terms of the Erie Doctrine. And they're citing Exxon Corporation versus Berglund, a Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals decision. So the whole point of this rule, the election of remedies, is to protect the government fisc from having alternative theories of liability, suing the employees on intentional tort basis and the city on negligent basis, because otherwise there is no liability of the city under the intentional tort basis, and that's what people were doing in order to get around this. Now, Mr. Swain was not familiar with the Texas Tort Claims Act when he filed his petition, but that should not excuse him from being subject to the ramifications of, at the time you file your lawsuit, you make an irrevocable decision. Are you filing against the employer because the acts of the employees were within the scope of their employment, and therefore the government is liable, or are you filing against the employees because the acts were outside the scope of their employment, and therefore they're individually liable? It's under federal law, 1983, or under the state law, it's the same result. They are asking that you don't file alternatively theories against government employees because the state has determined that protection of the public fisc is a priority.
have filed his 1983 claim in federal court?
In federal court, I believe if he had filed a 1983 claim against the employers and the employees.
And would it be your position then you could go into federal court and under the state statute dismiss the employees?
If he did not file any type of state action against the employees, if he didn't file intentional torts or if he didn't file, then this would not apply because he's not invoking the mandates of the Texas Tort Claims Act if he's not filing any state causes of action.
So could he file his 1983 claim in state court, standing alone, and not be subject to 101-106?
Yes, if it was a state claim, standing alone, it would have been removed to federal court. And in this circumstances, if he had filed 1983 against the employer and the employee, there are different rules as to where the liability lies against the governmental entity and the employee than there is in state court regarding intentional torts. Any other questions?
All right. Thank you, Ms. Wilkerson.
Thank you.
Mr. Swain, you'll have a 5-minute rebuttal.
Judge McCoy, I want to go back and address that question you had earlier about the procedure rule. It should be, as far as the documents being presented before a hearing, Texas Rules of Civil Procedure 21. In replying back to what the City of Arlington has discussed, Arlington's claim is not a party to this appeal except to defend the motion it filed on behalf of employees. It's a cynical attempt to argue inconsistently in violation of Texas law. If Arlington is not a party, then it has no standing here. The claim that my statement of facts is completely irrelevant simply ignores the real subject matter of this case. I agree that the standard review in this case is abuse of discretion. The Texas Supreme Court in Walker versus Packer found that a trial court has no discretion in determining what the law is or applying the law to the facts of the case. A clear failure by the trial court to analyze or apply the law to the facts correctly constitutes abuse of discretion. This is precisely what the trial court did in my case. Appellee is simply and categorically wrong in claiming that the doctrine of governmental immunity protects governmental entities and their employees from suits unless immunity has been legislatively waived. The Texas Supreme Court said in Thomas versus Allen that although protection of immunity are broad, they do not extend to liability under Civil Rights Act, and that state court cannot refuse to entertain 1983 claim on the grounds that it is barred by the defense of immunity. Both the Fifth Circuit in Flores versus Cameron County and the United States Supreme Court in Monell recognize the Texas Tort Claims Act does not waive immunity if the claim arises out of assault, battery, false imprisonment, or other intentional torts. I dispute opposing counsel's claim that I am somehow seeking unfair advantage. Authority that shows the courts have a duty to construe pro se pleadings liberally in light favorable to pro se filers do not apply here. I hope you will agree that my brief and reply are crystal clear on their own. The crux of my argument is that I have not even received consideration due a licensed attorney when opposing counsel served her last court pleading in a manner less than 24 hours before the hearing. Even a licensed attorney is given more time under the rules. My argument was and is that the purpose of the notice requirement is unfair surprise and trial by ambush. I dispute categorically that the sole issue on appeal is the applicability of TTCA Section 101.106E. This is not a Texas Court Claims Act, and it never has been. Most importantly, appellee's brief should be struck or disregarded in its entirety because it failed to address the requirements under Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure 38 that states in part, when practical, the appellee's brief should respond to the appellant's issues or points in the order the appellant presented those issues or points. Appellee's brief in this court failed entirely to address the issue of my 1983 claims. It relied solely on inappropriate authority relating to the TTCA when the TTCA is clearly not the law of this case. It fails to rebuke any single point on my brief with any relevant authority whatsoever. It relies entirely on inappropriate cases and conflicting and ill-founded arguments to distract the court from the trial court's clear and manifest error. In short, opposing counsel's brief is unworthy of this court's consideration and should be struck according to the rules. Even the example she used on the case Walton versus the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, it states in that case that the plaintiff used both Title 42 and Section 1983 and the Tort Claims Act. And it was dismissed because TDCJ is a unit of the state government. It is not a person. The reason being, that's a department of the state. I'm suing the state directly, which is a person. I'm also suing the city of Arlington, which is also considered a person. Thank you so much for your time. Any additional questions?
Thank you, Mr. Swang. Thank you, Ms. Wilkerson. Your case is submitted, as well as your briefing. We thank you for that and your arguments today. You all are dismissed.
Thank you.